You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
I'm Drew Leiter.
And I'm Cleese Jacobs.
And welcome to episode 125 of the Earth Station DCU. Tonight we're going to talk Superman number 5, Supergirl number 24, Catwoman number 5, Flash number 58, Wonder Woman number 58, Plastic Man number 6, Mr. Miracle number 12, Supergirl season 4 episode 6, Call to Action, Arrow season 7 episode 6, Due Process, Legends of Tomorrow season 4 episode 5, Tagumo Attacks, Flash season 5 episode 6, The Icicle Cometh, Black Lightning, Season 2, Episode 6, The Book of Blood, Chapter 2, The Purdy, and Titans, Season 1, Episode 6, Jason Todd. But before we get into that, let's talk some DC news. All right, Cletus, first up for DC news. DC has released photos from next week's episode of Titans, featuring our first look at the actress Connor Leslie playing Donna Troy. And I hadn't heard anything about Donna Troy being in the first season, so I was kind of surprised when I saw that news.
Okay, I was thinking the same thing. I was like, oh, I didn't remember she was going to be on the show. It does kind of make sense, though, to be honest, because we kind of mentioned that the roster is quite small. So, I mean, I'm sure she probably won't be a major character for the rest of this season, probably. But hopefully that sets her up to be a team member, hopefully maybe next season.
Yeah, I hope so. And if I remember right, we did see her name pop up on Dick Grayson's telephone.
Yeah, we definitely did, yeah.
So that was cool. I mean, just seeing the pictures of her, that wasn't anything special.
Right.
So, but I am glad she's going to be part of the Titans. All right, moving on to our next bit of DC news. We got to see the Supergirl clip from the Elseworlds crossover. The little clip we did see, we see that Alex has Kara locked up in a DEO cell.
It was weird because it was, I think, the most plot insight of any of the ones that we had. The other ones we basically just saw Barry and Oliver just living as the other person, or this one we really see a pretty significant change. And yet was the one I was the least intrigued by. I'm not going to lie. Not that it was anything wrong with it, but I was just like, oh. I think it was because there wasn't the weirdness of the body swap that Oliver and Barry have, that it was kind of like, okay.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It wasn't as shocking, I guess.
Right, yeah. It was like, oh, that makes sense. If we're in a different world where stuff has happened, it makes sense that Supergirl and her would not interact. Yeah, sure.
Yeah. All right. And for our last bit of DC news, the Batwoman clip for the Elseworlds crossover. I like this one because you hear Barry and, well, I don't know if it's called Barry or Oliver, but you see Grant Gustin in the Arrow costume and Vibe is with him, or Cisco. Was he in the Vibe costume? I can't even remember now.
You know, that's a good question. I don't remember either.
But anyways, one of them saying that Batman is an urban legend, and the other one's like, you don't believe in Batman? And then Batwoman shows up, and they say, that's not Batman.
It was fun. That was a really fun one. And then also, I think connected with that, they had one of the producers was talking a bit about their introduction for Batwoman, saying that the Gotham that they're going with is like a ghost town, effectively, and that Batman has disappeared for whatever reason, and the criminals have basically just overrun the town. There are very few people that still live in that city, and it seems like Batwoman is somebody maybe rising up to stem the tide, so to speak, I guess. A very interesting what they're doing with that. So it makes me question, like, where is Batman? And does that maybe, hopefully, maybe leave the door open for him to pop up at some point?
That would be awesome. Plus, it grounds him. He is in the Arrowverse, which
You
they've
can't,
hinted at
yeah, you
before.
can't do Batwoman and say that there is no Batman. Like, it's the same thing with Supergirl. Like, when they had Supergirl, they had to acknowledge the existence of Superman.
Yeah. So that is cool. And Batwoman looked awesome.
It is so good. I am, every time I look at it, I'm like, man, that is just, they really nailed the look of that costume.
Yes, they did. So I'm very excited about this Elseworlds crossover, and it's only like 2 or 3 weeks away. So very excited. All right, well, that wraps up our DC news for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll do our comics talk.
Greetings, Starfighters. It's Sean from the Rusted Robot Podcast. Join me and the Rusty crew as we break down the latest geeky movie trailers, talk about TV, comics, toys, games, casting news, and all things nerdy. Find us on all your favorite podcast apps, the ESO Network, and at therustedrobot.podbean.com. The Rusted Robot Podcast, your source for geek since 2014.
The Rusted Robot Podcast. Think about it.
And we're back. But before we get into this week's comic books talk, we gotta let you know, there's gonna be spoilers.
We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. We got spoilers.
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 We've got spoilers.
Spoilers
for you. For you.
Alright, let's talk Superman number 5. I gave this one the old thumbs up. I found Zod's dream about a new Krypton interesting, and I actually like the idea of a new Krypton that involves the House of El, the House of Zod, and the House of Kandor, but with one condition. Not under Zod's leadership, not without General Zod serving time for his crimes against Earth, which we both know that's not going to happen.
Right, yeah. Well, I mean, plus the other reason even your ideal scenario couldn't happen is because then in some way Superman sort of just gets a happy ending. Like, you know what I mean? Like, that would be hard for that to not be a, like, where's the strife come after that?
Yeah, that's true. But I have a feeling that even if that happened, he wouldn't live there. He'd live on Earth.
That's probably true. Plus, well, let's acknowledge the bigger issue is the House of Kandor. Makes that part of that reality is going to be pretty difficult to achieve at the moment.
Yeah, that's true. It was interesting to find out where the Earth was. The atom shrunk it, and they didn't really give us an explanation why. I hope they do that next issue.
He shrunk it. Superman was having him do it. I can't remember what the exact reasoning was, but it was to help Earth get out of the Phantom Zone.
Well, I knew it was to help Earth get out, but I was wondering why it helped Earth or the Earth get out of there. What was the reasoning behind it? Oh, I guess I was looking for a scientific reason.
I could be wrong. I feel like they did explain it, but it was like 2 issues ago, which was for us like 2 months ago, so I can't remember anymore.
Maybe I'll have to go back and read it then. But I just didn't understand why they did it.
I think they're what I could be wrong. I really did think they did explain it in the moment, and at this point, I just don't remember because then there was like what there was like 2 or 3 issues in between, I think.
All right. Well, I can go back and check that out later. We get to the end of this issue. We have General Zod coming to fight Superman's battle for him. I was like, I'm not really sure how I feel about this because it kind of makes Superman look lame, I thought. I want a story where Superman uses his intellect and his morals to overcome Rogue Ol Zar.
Let's see, but no, I might want to counterpoint you on that. I feel like he was on the cusp of – it could just be the way Bendis was writing the scene to make you think that, but it kind of seemed like Superman was on the verge of actually getting through to Rogue Ol Zar, and then Zod barges in right at the end and is just like, ah, I'm going to punch you.
Hmm.
Because right at the very end, all of a sudden, Rogue Ol Zar has this sort of like – we don't hear the end of his thought process, so I don't know exactly where he was going with it, and I think that's sort of Bendis's point. But he's saying, like, man, if I was you and this thing happened where all of my people died, like the Sea of Kandor dies, and then these things die, like I would be on a homicidal rage like no other. And the fact that even this still won't piss you off, and then he gets cut off.
Okay, I remember that now.
I don't know. And again, maybe he was just going to say something like, this proves how weak you are, and then would have gone for the kill shot. I don't know. Who knows? But it seemed like there was a chance that Superman was actually getting through the Superman way, and then Zod just barges in.
So, I told you how I felt about it. So, I see your point, though.
Yeah.
And I was actually surprised they brought Zod into this. So I'm wondering where this is going, where the story's going now.
I mean, the interesting thing with this is that I could almost see Bendis using this as a way to get Zod back locked in the Phantom Zone, which would be a really kind of like unexpected backdoor way to like lock away another villain. And I still feel like Bendis is really being sneaky about setting things up in a way that he wants them to.
But why would he want to lock Zod in the Phantom Zone? We got him out now. We can do stuff with him against Superman. I mean, right now he's just been living on his own planet, not doing anything antagonistic yet.
I think that's, but I don't disagree with you. Cletus Jacobs, co-host of Earth Station DCU, agrees with you. I'm just saying from Michael Bendis's point of view, I could be wrong. I don't know what he's thinking, but I could see him. He didn't write Zod out of the Phantom Zone. Somebody else did. I could see, and we've kind of talked about this, how he's been really sneaky about changing the status quo in a way that makes it look like stuff isn't changing that much. But really, he's setting it up to what he wants it to be. And I could see him being like, I like Zod being in the Phantom Zone.
Yeah, that could be.
And this story pulls him in. I could see Bendis saying, I don't really like whatever it is that we're trying to do with Zod's planet. I'm not interested in that. And so he pulls Zod almost inexplicably into the Phantom Zone. And then we'll see how it goes. But if he ends up locked in the Phantom Zone, I'm just saying.
All right, well, let's move on to our next title for this week. Supergirl number 24. Gave it the old thumbs up. We see Kara get into a fight and meet a new Kaluan friend who is looking for Kaluan colony. And he hitches a ride with Kara after fixing her spaceship. And, of course, we know that Kalu is the home planet of Brainiac.
I also gave this a thumbs up. I'm very much enjoying this Supergirl arc a lot. I think it's given a real sense of purpose for the title. I think that's one of the things that Supergirl, the comic, has struggled with, is they keep trying to make it happen, but they can never seem to find the right story to tell. And it feels like they've found one with this. I question, do we think the guy from Kalu is really on her side? Because there was somebody, an agent, that was going to try and make contact with her. And then, lo and behold, the only person that she really...
Yeah, I was wondering about that myself. So, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I thought one of the most interesting things about this was Kara goes back. She says she wants to go back to the scene of the crime. And so she goes to what's left of Krypton. And we see her fall to the floor of her ship in a weakened state. I'm wondering, what's your reason for going here, Kara?
Wait. How did you not see that coming?
Yeah. I'm really enjoying Supergirl, though. And I like her going off on adventure where she's just not fighting bad guys all the time.
Well, and it's an adventure that you're really committed into wanting to find the answer out. I think that's the thing, is like you could have a story where Supergirl goes off into space on an adventure with Krypto and have it be forgettable. You know what I mean? It's the mystery behind the trip that's really is what makes it so interesting. All of these stories have been good on their own, but I think what really is like keeping the story interesting and at least for me, keeping me engaged is the desire to know what the big mystery is that she's trying to solve.
Yeah, it's been really interesting. All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Catwoman number 5. I gave this the old thumbs up. We see Mrs. Creel murders her husband at the same time Catwoman's sister is being injected with a drug. And Mrs. Creel's behind both of them. We see her successfully kill her husband while Selina is able to stop her sister from getting the injection. I really enjoyed this issue. And I like the parallel story that was going on during the issue.
I gave this a thumbs up, which is no surprise. I've very much enjoyed this title. What I think is really interesting is this villain is she's such a good villain, and yet what I really like what Joelle Jones is doing is that she's really sowing her own defeat. Like, if she just let things be, they would be fine. Like, if she just didn't mess with Catwoman at all, a lot of this stuff wouldn't even be happening.
Yeah, that's true, because she was the one that's being antagonistic towards Catwoman, and Catwoman has no interest in getting involved with anything the Creels are doing.
And then also, we can see her son did not seem to be entirely on board with the mom at the end there.
Yeah.
Once he sees what happens to her husband, I believe it's his dad. I can't remember if that was a stepdad or if that was his dad.
I can't remember either.
He seemed to know immediately what really had happened, which makes sense.
Yeah.
And he did not seem to be on board with that, and especially then when she was trying to tell him, I think that he needed to take a little bit of that. Yeah. I can see that backfiring on her with next issue, potentially.
Yep. All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Flash number 58. Gave it the old thumbs up. I really enjoyed Barry and Iris working together on their quest to discover the new force powers. Like I've said in the past, I'm not really interested in these new force powers, but I am. I really enjoyed Barry and Iris' interactions in this story and how well they're working together, and it seemed like a more happy Barry. What's your thoughts on this?
Honestly, this was still a thumbs down issue for me because, I don't know, not a lot happened. I was sort of intrigued by the Gemini twins, but then the story just sort of, I see the writer committing the same mistakes that he's made basically his entire run, to be honest with you, because we have this sort of interesting interaction with these Gemini thieves, or not twins, I should say, but thieves. And then all of a sudden he just goes off and he's like, yeah, we'll have to worry about them later. We're going to head to Gorilla City. Which I'm intrigued by, but at the same time, I was like, you just set up this other storyline, and it's clearly not over. Like, he commits that one scene at the end to see that these thieves are going to go after Barry to try and steal his power, but we're not going to worry about that. We're going to go to Gorilla City. Like, he just can't seem to stay focused on a storyline properly.
Yeah, I did find that interesting, and I was surprised by Barry's reaction not to go after the Gemini. That's what I would have expected him to do. So I have to agree with you. I thought it was kind of weird that he left it alone and they just went to Gorilla City.
Well, especially when he had it was such a melodramatic scene where this is history lost. And it's just Flash kneeling melodramatically in the rubble. And the next thing he's like, yeah, it's fine, whatever. Let's go to Gorilla City. It's just like, come on, man. Like, if you're really gonna milk that scene, which was just ridiculous, if you're gonna milk it like that, then he has to be committed to catching them. You can't have him react that ridiculously over the top and have him be like, nah, but really though, it's fine, whatever.
So yeah, I'm expecting these Gemini people to show up again at some point in the future, but I'm interested in what's going on at Gorilla City too.
I agree. I mean, that's the thing that frustrates me a lot with this entire run of The Flash is that they keep coming up with these interesting things and then they just keep finding even more creative ways to not doing anything with them.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense, but like they come up with these interesting premises and then they just kind of whiff.
Yeah, I can see your point of view there. All right, let's move on to Wonder Woman number 58. Gave it the old thumbs up. I think this is the best story we've had since the end of Greca's run. besides the Witchmark storyline. I really like that storyline. We got to see some interaction between Wonder Woman and Steve Trevor, even though it was kind of a flashback kind of thing. Steve Trevor goes MIA during the mission, and Wonder Woman, even though she's told not to go after Steve, she goes after Steve.
This was a thumbs up for me, too. It's amazing how a Wonder Woman title can read when you have somebody writing dialogue correctly. Just the interaction between Wonder Woman and Steve was just light years difference. Steve was infinitely less creepy. And it was just like, I don't know. It was incredible as I was reading. I was like, wow, this is how real people talk to each other. Who knew?
Yeah, I remember you having issues with the dialogue a while back.
And then I also don't think it's a coincidence that this is a fairly strong return since Rucka left, because it goes back to some of the stuff that Rucka was using, where he had Ares imprisoned within Thymyscira.
Yes.
Or in that realm in between the two. And we kind of go back into that, and now he's escaped. And we've got this... We're not really entirely sure what's going on with Ares. It's probably not good.
He wasn't...
But it doesn't seem explicitly bad at the moment either. So it's like, oh, okay, what's going on with this?
Yeah, he talks about turning over a new leaf, and he wants to team up with Wonder Woman. I'm like, okay, that's weird. The other thing I thought was interesting in this issue was the boy and those magical creatures. And I was wondering if it had something to do with the Upside Down Man being in Olympus. Did those magical creatures flee Olympus? I was wondering if they were going to tie that in to the Witchmark storyline.
I don't know. See, I wasn't sure. And the other thing I wasn't entirely clear on was the boy that we saw. There was clearly something going on with him. And honestly, at first, I thought that boy was Ares reborn in some way. But then when he popped up at the end, I was like, oh, well, then that probably couldn't be Ares. But there was something going on with that kid.
Yeah, I'm interested in finding out more about him. I did not think he was Ares, but I am
pretty sure I'm wrong about that. Like I said, that was before I got to the end of the comic. I was like, is this how Ares like comes back? And then all of a sudden he popped up at the end. I was like, oh, okay. Well, then who's that kid? So I don't know, but something was definitely going on with that kid.
Yes, definitely. I mean, why else would he be harboring magical creatures?
Right.
So, yeah, I'm very intrigued with this new run of Wonder Woman, and I'm happy we're getting a better storyline.
Me too.
All right, let's move on to our next issue for this week. Plastic Man number 6. Gave this one the old thumbs up. We see Plastic Man battles the Durlin Shapeshifter through the amusement park. It's freaking hilarious, I thought. I love the panel with Plastic Man fighting with the nuns on the roller coaster in the background. I thought this was a great ending to this miniseries.
I agree. It was a thumbs up for me. I thought Plastic Man's victory over that cabal or whatever they were was like the perfect way for Plastic Man to win. Basically, it was basically like, look, I know what really will bother you guys is being embarrassed, and nobody does that better than me. I thought that was great. I thought that was the perfect, most Plastic Man-esque way to win a fight like that. The overall story was enjoyable, and the potential for a follow-up series is very exciting. I actually was kind of excited that Lady Granite didn't end up encountering Plastic Man at all, because I think it would have felt shoehorned in at the end.
Yeah, it would have. And it just sets it up for another story in the future. It's basically like, here's my story. I left it open at the end. Are you going to give me more DC?
I hope they will. I kind of think they will. I can't imagine DC would let them print the teaser on that if they weren't intending to give the sequel.
Right. And I think the good thing about doing Plastic Man is to do it with miniseries. Instead of trying to do a regular series with Plastic Man, I just think the sales wouldn't be up as much as doing multiple miniseries. What's your thoughts on that?
I 100% agree. I absolutely agree. I think with most of your lower tier characters in terms of popularity, that is what you have to do, because then with miniseries, obviously they're still gonna be looking for issue sales, but really I feel like, at least I hope, that they would realize that your sales are gonna come from trades, which is where the money is. We've talked about this before. But then also you're not beholden to a monthly shipping schedule, that they can do. They shipped Plastic Man monthly, but clearly it was ready to be shipped 6 months in a row. And now they can, Gail Simone and the artist can take time off, get it done, and then ship the next six. This is the Image model. That's what Image does with their titles, like Saga. Saga goes on these hiatuses, and then the two creators get back together. They get the next six issues done. They put them out each month, and then they go on another hiatus until the next six are ready. I think it's just, unless it's Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and a couple others like Green Lantern, it's just a Flash. But unless it's one of those like major tier characters, I think this is the way to go. And I think DC is smart for recognizing that.
Yeah, I agree with you. All right, let's move on to our last issue for this week. And I think the one we've been most excited to talk about. Mr. Miracle number 12. Definitely gave it the thumbs up.
Yeah, I agree. It was a great issue, and I thought even more importantly, it was a fantastic ending to the series. I personally was very satisfied with the ending with this. I could see potentially somebody who maybe wants a more concrete answer on what it was that they just read could be dissatisfied, but for me, I thought it was the perfect ending to that story.
All right, let me bring up the big question then. Is Mr. Miracle dead? That's the big question that Tom King left for us to answer all the way back in issue number one. Did he commit suicide? We've read through 12 issues, and we still don't have a true answer, but what do you think?
This is going to sound like I'm cheating, but I feel like this is sort of my answer is sort of what I took to be the point of the comic. Does it matter?
Okay. You jump right to the end, Clayton.
But that was sort of my takeaway, was that maybe he did and maybe he didn't, but whatever reality he is in right now, he is happy in that, and that's what matters. So whether he did potentially die in some other reality, does it matter? And for him, at least at the end of this story, no, it didn't. And then for me, it didn't matter either, because we got 12 great issues of a comic.
Yes, we did. Okay, let me just read my finishing monologue for this since you jumped to the end. Because I wrote one. I said, whether scot-free is in heaven or in hell, in the DC universe or another reality in the multiverse, pre-Flashpoint, post-Flashpoint, pre-crisis, post-crisis, it doesn't really matter. Wherever scot-free is, Mr. Miracle number 12, he has found a life to live.
Great minds think alike, man.
Yep.
Yeah, this was great. I thought it was a great ending. Like I said, I was very, very, very satisfied with how this story wrapped up. I hope. The teaser at the end was like, it fit just the style of the story, but I was also like, are you saying that maybe you'll do another miniseries? Because I would definitely read that.
Oh yeah, I would too. One of the things I liked about this issue had a lot of characters that killed off during the series popping back up and giving suggestions to Scott, like when we see Granny ask him why he would make all this up just to escape her nightmarish care, or Forager tells him he killed himself and he went to hell. Then you have Orion tells him that he is in heaven. You know, I like how they used people who died during the series to come back and give different suggestions of what could be going on.
Yeah.
It was really interesting.
I agree. Yeah. I mean, it was, and I loved the interactions with, you have the sort of stand-ins for both Stan Lee and Jack Kirby in there. And I thought that their interactions were really fitting too, just from like a metafictional standpoint. Everything was really great.
Yeah. This was a great issue to wrap up the series.
I cannot recommend this series enough. I mean, I'm sure if you've been listening to our podcast that you've picked up on that. But seriously, if you have waited on this series for the trade, I cannot recommend going and picking up the trade whenever it comes out. I'm assuming in like a month or two, maybe 3 or 4 months. Pick it up, man. It is so good. It is so worth the read.
I have a feeling they'll get this one out in trade fairly quickly.
I would think so, too. My guess is that this last issue's been done for a while, so they would have the ability to have gotten the trade together.
All right, well, that wraps up our comic books talk for this week. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk our CW shows and Titans.
We don't go in there. You don't want to go in there.
There's a reason that chamber has no door.
What did she tell you? That it must have been a dream?
Rookie mistake, Doc!
Turn it up to 11 with Flask. Let's see what she's got. And smoke me a kipper. I'll be back for breakfast.
No, Doc, it's a rational transaction. One life for billions.
If you think that's impressive, wait until I get going. The answer's 1 + 2 + 1 + 1.
You must be truly desperate to come to me for help.
Dr. Geek's Laboratory of Applied Geekdom, Season 3, coming soon.
And we're back. Let's talk Supergirl, Season 4, Episode 6, Call to Action. So we see in this episode that the Children of Liberty are escalating their agenda by using dogs to sniff out aliens and marking their houses as targets. And luckily, the team is able to discover the plot and put a stop to it before anybody really got hurt.
Yeah, this was another good episode, I thought. I mean, the threat of the Agent of Liberty and the people that he's inspiring is, I think, it's possibly the best antagonistic thing that Supergirl's had to deal with, I think, on the show.
Without a doubt. I mean, how do you fight hate?
Yeah.
That's the big thing of this series, or this season, I mean.
Right.
How do you fight hate? And it's an ongoing battle.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, it doesn't even seem to be a clear... Like, obviously, yes, in theory, you just take down the Agent of Liberty, but is that enough? Like, would that be enough? I don't know. I don't know if it will be.
I don't know either.
The other thing I thought was interesting is we seem to be getting... I think Manchester Black is going to get his powers, don't you?
Yeah, I think so, too.
I don't know how it's going to happen. I'm still very surprised that this is a non-powered Manchester Black. I can honestly say I was not expecting that. But I'm convinced that we're going to get to there because of the scenes that we got this time where he's like, yeah, but if I could see into your mind, it was like, okay, I see your game.
So, yeah, he continues to be an interesting character, and he's going down that dark path for sure. Also want to talk about Brainiac 5. His little fight scene where he doesn't throw one punch. He's just dodging around everywhere. I'm going to stop you using physics. And not one of the Agents of Liberties were able to put a hand on him. It was freaking hilarious.
That way, yeah, I enjoyed that quite a bit myself. Yeah, that was good.
And the other thing I thought was awesome about this issue, this episode, was Supergirl fought a dragon.
That was so unexpected. I was like, is this really where this episode is going? It was great. It was a really cool fight. I'm not going to lie. I can honestly tell you that that was the last thing I was expecting to happen in that episode.
Then I thought that scene was great too, because it showed the Children of Liberty beat down that innocent dad who might not even known his kid had an alien pet. He may have just thought it was a regular lizard.
Yeah, I have to say it seemed to be unclear whether it was just the lizard that was an alien and that the family was human. That was ambiguous, I thought.
My personal take on it, at least when I watched it, I got the notion that the pet was the only alien and the rest of them were all humans. But they didn't explain it.
You might be
it,
right. So. I honestly couldn't tell.
They didn't explain it, but I thought that showed, you know, you got the Children of Liberty jumping to the conclusion that the dad was an alien and ended up just being a human because the pet was the alien. Yep. So I just thought that was a great scene for that reason.
Oh, I agree.
We're seeing a lot of interesting things going on right now. We have James Olsen who's trying to infiltrate the group, and they basically just kidnap him there at the end. I'm a little worried about what's going to happen to him. We see him and Lena drifting apart too.
Yeah, I honestly gotta say, I'm surprised that this seems to be what is pushing Lena into a more villainous role. Of all of the things that could have been it, I was not expecting her and James Olsen's relationship to be the thing.
Yeah, I didn't expect that either. That might only be part of it too. We see Lena's ideas where she thinks giving people superpowers to defend themselves against dangerous aliens. I don't agree with that. You know what I mean?
Right.
That's almost like the concept of giving everybody guns. You know what I mean?
Oh, I agree with you. It seems like one of those. I guess it kind of makes sense that Lena might think that, but also it's like that's. It's kind of a dumb idea that I feel like she would be able to see the flaws in.
Yeah, you would think so. John Jones is one of the characters who's actually making a true difference here, helping the aliens out with their problems one at a time. I mean, it's a slow process for him, but I think he's actually making some ground, don't you think?
I think so. I'm enjoying what they're doing. I'm hoping the whole nonviolence thing comes to an end because, like, I want to see Martian Manhunter beat people up. But other than that, I've really enjoyed what they're doing with him this season.
Yeah, and I'm continuing to enjoy this season of Supergirl. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Arrow, Season 7, Episode 6, Due Process. Man, what a great episode. It was good to see Anatoly again, but man, he's sending Felicity further down that dark path. And when they caught Diaz, she did not seem to be happy about it.
I am curious what is going to happen with Diaz next week.
Oh, I'm sure he's going to escape. I mean, we can't keep him captured.
Well, we see from the promo that he's going to be attacking the prison that Oliver's in. But I'm curious if that's... I'm wondering if Diaz might get defeated potentially next episode and something else. We've speculated that there might be a secondary threat.
Yeah, we have. And
I'm almost curious if we're getting close to the sort of defeat of Diaz and leading into something else. I don't know. And I wouldn't be upset if we don't. Like, if he escapes again and continues to be a threat, I'd be fine with that.
Yeah, that's what I was expecting to happen. But the other thing I thought, see, I haven't seen the preview for the next Arrow. I thought with Diaz being caught, he'd end up going to the same prison as Oliver, and they'd have some sort of confrontation coming up in the future. But you're saying that Diaz actually attacks the prison?
Based on the promo, yeah, he attacks the prison.
Okay. So he must get away from the police somehow to be able to attack the prison.
Right, but then, yeah, so clearly he gets away at least initially, but then or also if he gets defeated, which he probably will, be difficult for him to get out of that one, I would think.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting, that's for sure.
So anyway, I'm sorry, going back to Felicity, though, I'm not necessarily a huge fan on this. I'll do whatever it takes to get rid of Diaz, Felicity. Like, it's just, I don't know.
Well, okay. We get the flash forward this week, and Felicity, they say Felicity becomes the calculator. So is she going down some dark path where she's going to become a villain?
That definitely seems to be what they're suggesting. Which I'm not necessarily opposed to, except for she's always been, the show has always gone like ad nauseum how she's like the heart of Team Arrow and like she's the moral compass for some of these guys. And then all of a sudden now, because Oliver goes to prison, she snaps. Like, come on.
I know, it doesn't feel true to her character, does it?
Yes, but it also feels a little bit of a slap in the face to viewers who have had to listen to her BS for seasons, or her guilting John and Oliver to, oh, da, da, you always got to do the right thing, which is, I agree with, don't get me wrong, but like, she's always the one harping on them, right?
Yes.
And then now she's just going to get a free pass to do this? Like, come on. Like, you can't have her be that character and then have her snap like this, in my opinion.
Agreed. This doesn't feel right. All right. The other thing I want to talk about before we move on is I'm really liking Laurel's redemption arc, because she is really struggling to do the right thing. And we see that with the scene with the judge. Laurel clearly didn't like the outcome, and she was really ready to attack the judge. Luckily, Dinah stepped in and made her think about what she was doing.
I'm liking it a lot. You can tell, I feel we've mentioned it a couple of times, but this season in particular really strongly feels like the show being like, our bad, we should not have killed Laurel. Because she feels a lot like, she's definitely Black Siren, like they're not ignoring her past, but this season in particular feels most like we're almost back to just Laurel being back.
Yeah.
Where she's being a lawyer again. And we had seen Laurel was kind of going, like, trending darker in the later seasons that she was in. That she was kind of, you know what I mean? Like, trending towards where, for Black Siren, she's better than she was. But for Laurel, it's I feel like it's right within the trajectory of where she was headed.
A darker...
Right now, like where Black Siren is right now, where she's not murderous, but she's definitely okay with some questionable things, feels like the trajectory that Laurel was on originally. And the upward trajectory of Black Siren has kind of met that, and we're at a point now where it feels like we're about where Laurel would be had she not died.
And getting them back to where they originally would have had her at.
Yeah.
Arrow continues to be the best of the CW shows this season so far, in my opinion.
I agree. I am hooked every episode. Like, I'm just like, man, this is, they've consistently week to week had a really engaging story to tell.
Yes, they
which
have.
Which is hard to do. It's hard to do for 22 episodes. I get that, but I really feel like they've not had a throwaway episode yet.
And we're on season 7, and it's one of the best seasons we've had for a long time, my opinion. I mean, last season was pretty good, the end of it, and season 5 was good, but we had some down seasons there for a while.
Yeah. And I also think seasons 5 and 6 had to kind of work into where they got to a point where they were good. I thought 5 was good overall, was much, much better than 3 and 4, but it also took a little bit to build up to it. It was really when they got to Adrian Chase that the show got really good. And then it was season 6 really wasn't good until that like last third. It was pretty bad a couple times. You can go back to a couple of my rants on last season. But so far, like, it started strong and it's stayed strong, which it's been some time since the show's been able to have a maintained level of success.
Yes. Season two.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Legends of Tomorrow, Season 4, Episode 5, Tagumo Attacks.
This is such a fun episode. I know they all are, but this one in particular, I don't know why, but it's just really just the whole idea of going back to Japan and right before Godzilla comes around, like the idea of Godzilla, it was so fun.
It was fun. That's what I love about Legends. It does not take itself too seriously. It's just fun to watch.
And what was impressive was while not taking themselves seriously, because you had a three-boobed warrior fighting a mini giant squid, you also had them dealing with like a really serious issue of the trauma of survivors of the two bombings in Japan. Like what was so impressive to me was that they were able to do both. That they were able to have a scene as ridiculous as that final fight scene, and still also I think deal with what that was like for Japanese people in a way that didn't dismiss it. And the fact that they're able to do both in the same episode is impressive.
Yeah, that is impressive, and they're just doing a great job on Legends. Bringing us the seriousness with the funny. Let's talk about Nora. So we see Ray once again with Nora, and he's able to talk her into saving John Constantine. What'd you think about Nora turning herself in? Do you think we're done with her storyline now, or do you think she's going to be back later this season?
No, I don't think we're done with that storyline at all. In fact, I feel like we're at just the beginning of that story.
Now, do you think she's going to be joining the Legends, maybe?
I do. I honestly think we are going to see her. Maybe not right away, but I do think she's going to end up being a member of the team.
Okay. She's an interesting character. Still a little creepy with her and Ray, but...
Yeah.
But it is interesting.
I liked what they did. I'm really curious. She has that flash where she sees a guy. Do you remember?
No, I don't.
Who I didn't recognize who it was, and it didn't really seem to address it right away. So I was left very curious. I'm like, who is this guy supposed to be? I don't know if I just didn't catch the scene. I should have known who it was. And I didn't see it well enough, but when I watched it live, I did not recognize who that was. That brief flash, he saw some. Oh no, I'm sorry. It was somebody from Constantine's past.
Yeah, she says something to Constantine, didn't she?
Yeah. Now that we're talking about it, now I'm remembering it. Yeah, I'm curious to find out what that is. I don't know Constantine super well, so again, that's another one where I don't know if that's a character that we should know or not.
I'm wondering, does it have to do with what we saw at the beginning of the season with that thing that attacked John?
I would believe that it's connected, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking too. All right, I got to tell you, I like how Mick kind of stepped out at the end of this episode with his three-breasted woman. Oh man, that was freaking hilarious. And I definitely had to laugh at the old she grabs Roy at the end of the end of defeating the squid. Man, that was freaking hilarious.
Yes.
The thing that was kind of weird about it is everybody just kind of stood there and watched. That's like, okay. And last thing I want to talk about with this episode. So, do you think Nate's dad is the big villain of the season?
No. I don't. Okay. I can see him being antagonistic, but I don't think necessarily intentionally antagonistic. I can see him being just in the typical military government guy who wants to use powerful creatures for their own military might.
Yeah, and that's what I figured Project Hades was.
I still think the bad guy is somebody connected to Constantine.
Do you think all these creatures they've been kind of sending out at the team, or what, or the team's been going to investigate? Do you think that has something to do with the big villain, or is this just all stuff happening on the side leading up to that?
I don't know that they're necessarily connected. I mean, they're connected in that they all got unleashed by when the Legends had to take down Malice last season.
Okay.
And I think that whoever the big bad is got unleashed as well as these other creatures. I don't know necessarily that the bad guy is releasing these. There hasn't been anything strategic about the release of these creatures within the timeline. Unlike with Malice, what we saw last season, where they were intentionally exploiting certain eras for certain things. This just seems to be a bunch of magical creatures got out into random time periods.
And they're just chasing after them. And eventually they'll come across the big
bad. And it seems to me that whoever the big bad is taking advantage of this moment, so to speak, and not necessarily orchestrating the moment.
Okay.
I could be wrong. That's just been my take on it.
Okay. I was just curious because I wasn't sure. It just seemed like they were just battling random monsters to me.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Flash, Season 5, Episode 6, The Icicle Cometh. So we finally get to find out about Killer Frost's origin. We find out that Thomas Snow discovered that Caitlin had the genetic markers for ALS and gave her the same cure he gave himself, which created the Killer Frost persona. And, of course, we found out that Thomas Snow, basically, just like the evil version of Caitlin.
Icicle, as we learned.
Yes, Icicle. The Icicle persona had taken over Thomas Snow. I guess that's how I should phrase it.
So I watched this episode live, I think. And then I rewatched it because my girlfriend didn't catch it the first time. So I rewatched it with her. And then, obviously, knowing that he was going to really be Icicle the whole time, I was curious to watch that part again to see. I'm wondering, I know the implication is supposed to be that he was Icicle the entire time, but there are a couple scenes with Caitlin that I was like, is Icicle in control here? Because if he is doing a wonderful job acting.
That was the indication I got that when I only watched this once, and from what I understood was he was supposed to be an Icicle the whole time, you know, tricking Caitlin so he could create that serum he needed.
I think you're right too. There was a couple scenes where I was like, because there seemed to be the implication that her dad was still in there somewhere, and I almost wondered if I could believe if you said that the dad managed to break through a couple times. I could believe it because there were a couple interactions that seemed more like what they would be like if she was talking to her actual dad.
Now, what do you think of the Cecile Ralph team up?
I really liked it. I thought it was really good. I also think the show is doing a really good job of hiding Joe's absence so far.
Yeah. We already know why Joe was absent, because the actor hurt his back. And I have to agree with you. They're doing a good job of even though he was out for a really long walk with their baby daughter. I think Cecile kind of made up for it, because that would definitely have been a part Joe would have teamed up with Ralph on.
I honestly kind of liked Cecile better in that, with the way that they chose to do that scene. They obviously would have done it differently with Joe, but it was really funny. Like, that was a fun side story.
Yeah, it was. And I think they're doing a good job with their side stories in this season of Flash. And their use of Ralph and of Sherlock and some of the other characters.
I think that's one of the things with that Ralph adds well to the team, is that I think he's well suited for those side stories because he is not always immediately useful to the team in the way that like Caitlin or Cisco would be, if that makes sense. So like, it's hard to have one of them be absent from the main plot a lot of the time because they need to be involved. Whereas you can have Ralph basically completely uninvolved from the main story and not really have it affect the team at all.
Right. So the other thing we find out in this episode is that we see Nora, Iris, and Sherlock find the satellite core where that piece of shrapnel that had Cicada's dagger come from. I thought that was pretty interesting.
So, okay, so I was wondering, especially because I watched this twice, it seemed to me like Sherlock knew where the satellite was and was basically was wasting time until they essentially believed that they figured it out on their own.
You mean Nora and Iris?
Yeah.
Yeah, because basically what it boiled down to was Nora was wanting to spend time with Iris, and Sherlock, he got to the point where he just kind of let them do their thing. Because at the beginning of their little story, Sherlock was wanting them to all split up and do these different things, and he finally gave in, realizing that Nora just wanted to spend time with Iris, and I think he just let them figure things out. That's the take I got on it.
Going even further than that, though, I felt like that was why they mentioned that he had been making tea for, I'm sure it was an exaggeration, but for 2 hours by the lake. It felt like he knew specifically that it was at the lake, and then he basically, like, random quotes around that, randomly brought them there and sat around until they figured out what he already knew, which was that the satellite was in that lake.
That could be.
That's what I'm saying. It felt like to me, like, yes, I agree. He kind of stepped back to let the two of them work together, but it felt also like he kind of like sat there and kept like not so subtly like hinting, like, maybe you should look in the lake. And then finally the two of them are like, hey, you know, I have an idea. What if the thing fell in the lake here?
Okay, I see what you're trying to say. Yeah, he might have done that.
I could be wrong. I don't know, because the show never outright says it. But the second, and I didn't totally pick it up on it the first time, but the second time I was watching, I was like, I think he knows it's here. And I think he's just waiting for them to figure it out. And then it's like, oh, yeah. Oh, hey, that's a great idea. Good for you for coming up with that. You should investigate that.
So... But I've been enjoying the Flash this season. You know how I always say Flash is my favorite. I've kind of been leaning towards Arrow this season.
I personally have enjoyed Arrow a little bit more. But that being said, I have very much enjoyed Flash this season as well. I really think all of the shows have been off to a really great start.
Yeah, I agree with you. And oh man, I'm so excited about the Elseworlds crossover.
Me too.
Just can't wait till we get to that. It's coming soon. All right, let's move on to our next episode for this week. Black Lightning, Season 2, Episode 6, The Book of Blood, Chapter 2, The Purdy. Okay, the number one takeaway from this episode, Gambi is still alive. And I thought it was awesome how they showed us how Gambi was able to get away. Very Gambi-like, I thought.
I agree completely. And that was what I had been wondering. We talked about this last episode. I was like, I'm pretty sure he's still alive, but the show has sowed enough doubt in my mind that I wasn't sure anymore.
Yeah, same with me. And I was very happy they put that to bed early in the episode.
I agree. And I think if you had waited too long at a certain point, it would have felt cheap.
Yeah. And it didn't feel cheap, so. We have several things going on in this story. We have Tobias and Khalil, and Tobias asks him to kill the Reverend. And we know that way back in Season 1, towards the beginning of this, Khalil was in that march, and he gets hurt by Tobias in that issue. So he learns that. And... man, we get an awesome fight scene between Tobias and Khalil when he didn't kill the Reverend.
I like that we're not getting a full villainous turn from Khalil. I still am not entirely sure that he won't go bad for a little bit, but I don't know. He seems to be resisting it to a certain extent.
Yeah, he is resisting it, but I don't see it going well for him. I think he's going to go...
Clearly, it definitely didn't go well this episode.
I see him going full-on villain, but we'll see. The other thing we see in this episode, we see Lynn is having a tough time coping with the loss of the 12 incubator kids. the backlash from the public is not helping, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was tough.
Yeah.
Those were some tough scenes.
That was some tough scenes. And then we get to the weird part of this episode, which was Anissa finds Anna, the girl who was pregnant at the clinic last episode. And we finally learn what the heck is going on in South Freeland. And it is some weird sci-fi stuff that I was not expecting to be on this show.
I really like that it's on this show, though. I feel like that's the one thing that the show's been missing a little bit, is that Black Lightning himself is awesome and is this huge threat. And and besides Tobias, there's rarely anybody that's on his level. Like, it's basically – most fights are just Black Lightning beating the crap out of gangsters that have no prayer of fighting him. So something on this level, this, and it's so weird and comic booky. Very cool. I'm really intrigued by this story. I'm not gonna lie, like I like Black Lightning a lot, but this has been the storyline that has intrigued me more than any other storyline so far on the show.
I know, it feels so weird though, but I like it too, and I like the fact that it's giving Black Lightning, it's giving something for Jefferson and Anissa to do that hasn't dealt with Tobias. It's like totally separate. So at least Tobias to do Tobias's thing. And I think I mentioned this last episode that I like the fact that Tobias and Black Lightning just don't keep going up against each other and Black Lightning losing till we get to the end of the season. They're both doing their own thing, working towards their big confrontation. I like it a lot.
I agree completely.
And this interesting sci-fi story we got going on is really interesting. And they also have a really interesting setup for it. You've got the Purdy that have lived separate from the town's rural white community since slavery ended. And, you know, there's been that kind of racial tension. But it also has to do with the girl who's got that metal stuff, silver substance that she controls her people with. You know, her prejudices become those people's prejudices because she controls them. Then we got the notion of the newborn twins, where you have one that's white and one's black, and they're both got the metal junk in it. So it's, I don't know, it's an interesting concept. I'm interested in seeing where this story goes.
I agree. I was thrilled that it didn't end this episode because it was such an intriguing premise. I was like, oh man, and they're going to beat her this episode and that'll be it. And then they didn't. I was like, ooh, okay.
So I don't know if it's going to wrap up next episode or not, but this episode was called The Purdy and the next one's called The Sange. I think that's how you pronounce it. So we're going to get to see the other people. So that, I think that's going to be really interesting. And they're obviously going to be coming after the other twin. All right, well, let's move on to our last title for this week. Titans, Season 1, Episode 6, Jason Todd. It was great seeing Dick Grayson and Jason Todd interacting. I thought this version of Jason Todd was just like the comic book version. Very brash, reckless, maybe a bit out of control, and
a little bit of a dark side.
Yeah, a little bit of a dark side, and very much the version of Robin I would expect to get killed by the Joker in the future.
Yeah, and there was a little, it almost seemed like they were hinting at that a little bit too.
Yeah.
Well, this is Batman put that in there so that he could find us if something ever happened. It was like if he were to kidnap you, for example.
Oh, man, when Dick found out about that, he didn't even know about it. Jason knew about it, but Dick didn't. We see Dick tear the sucker out. He wants no part of Bruce being able to track him.
That's something that always cracks me up in shows, is when a character digs a tracker or something out of their arm, and then they cut into their arm like it's nothing.
I know what you mean.
Like you wouldn't be like, especially like, I mean, he really cut into his arm, and it was like, he's like, yes, whatever. That's not whatever, man.
I have to say, the story of the son of Tony Zucco going after Dick, that was a great bringing back Dick's origin we saw earlier in this season, bringing it back around full circle, I thought. And maybe Dick's going to be ready to move on from his previous life with Batman and finally move towards his Nightwing role. At least that's where I felt this episode was heading towards.
I agree. I'm kind of expecting us to see a Nightwing costume by the end of the season.
Oh, yeah, for sure. One thing I have to say that was out of character, I thought, for Jason Todd was beating up the cops. I didn't feel like that was in line for his character. At least not the Jason Todd I'm used to.
I wonder if they're setting up, and maybe he won't die in the same way with the Joker. Maybe they'll set up a different kind of fall for that character. I don't know. Or maybe they're hinting at the darker side of him that comes out when he becomes Red Hood.
Oh, that could be.
Because Red Hood Jason Todd would for sure do that.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. Maybe instead of doing the whole... I think there was the idea that the Lazarus Pit, when it brought Jason Todd back, it kind of accentuated some of the darker parts of him. They could be doing it this way, where maybe he does appear to die from the Joker, but doesn't actually. And then they can just point to the hints of darkness that were there already.
Yeah. I'm wondering if we're going to get to see this story unfold, but it'd be weird for Batman not to be involved in it. You know what I mean?
I really hope Batman shows up at some point.
Yeah, because it'd just be weird not to. I mean, it's felt weird that he hasn't shown up yet already. But, you know, I'm sure that's a rights thing. But, yeah, I'm really enjoying the Titans Season 1 so far.
Agreed. It's been, it's been a pleasant surprise how much I've enjoyed this show. I was unsure how it was going to be, but it's been great.
Yeah, it has been. All right, well, that wraps up our show for this week. Do you have a shout-out, Cletus?
Yeah, so since we got the last issue of Plastic Man in, I thought I would recommend a Plastic Man title that I don't think I've recommended before. It's a one-shot from the 90s JLA run. The JLA presents Plastic Man number one. It's a 38-page special on Plastic Man. It's just some fun stories. Even the cover itself is pretty hilarious. It's referencing Grant Morrison always talks about how influenced he was by this one Silver Age issue of The Flash, where the cover is Flash saying, "Please, you have to read this comic or I won't survive," or something like that. And or "don't read this comic," or something like that. So one of those things. But anyway, the Flash is directly interacting with the reader on the cover. And this one is instead Superman speaking about this Plastic Man comic. "Stop. If you read this comic book, it will ruin the reputation of the JLA." It's funny. And it's just, again, it's just fun Plastic Man stories. So again, that is Plastic Man. JLA presents Plastic Man number one.
All right. And we'll have a link to that in our show notes. I'm going to shout out to the ESO Network because Director Faber has now you can subscribe to all the ESO Network shows now, which includes ours. And you can, at least I found it on Google Play, you could subscribe to it, and it gives you all the shows from the ESO Network, which is kind of cool. So if you listen to the other shows, including ours, you can now get them all and listen to them all. I think it's pretty cool myself. Well, if you'd like to comment on anything we've talked about tonight, you can leave us a message on our feedback line at 317-564-9133, or you can email us at earthstationdcu@gmail.com. All right, Cletus, coming up next week, we got Aquaman, Batman, Justice League, Justice League Dark, Nightwing, plus the CW shows, and Titans, where we get to see Donna Troy. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time.
Time to go.
You sure this is necessary?
The Guardians of the Universe seem to think so. How long will you be gone? But we will be back, little brother.
I wish I could go with.
I doubt your mother would approve.
I'll miss you.
Perhaps you could water the plants in my apartment while I am gone.
Be careful, all right?
May the gods be with you all.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping through Amazon.com or the TeePublic store, which can all be found at www.esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.